the root cause of any hard decisions I've had to make is letting go, always. Letting go of something tends to be what the hard decisions result in.
You are a driven international professional or manager, have achieved quite a bit already, but are asking yourself from time to time, what do I really want? How do I want to work and live? Then this is your podcast. I'm Gina Friedrich, career and life coach for people who want to actively shape their future. Every second Thursday, I release interviews for you with inspiring, successful, as well as renowned international personalities from the world of business, NGO, and sports. They all will share with you what these questions mean to them, how they handled obstacles in their lives, and shaped their journey to where they are today. You are curious and don't want to miss anything? Sign up for this podcast right here. And now, let yourself be inspired on your very personal journey towards the future that you wish for. Welcome to the first episode after my little summer break. And my guest today is Jonathan McDonald, an absolute change expert, book author, strategist, and speaker. He already published a set of books, and we talk about his latest one, Powered by Change, and its fundamental idea. In this episode, Jonathan talks about his journey in life and how it made him who he is today. He calls his present self a product of his past, which was embossed by some tough challenges, like being bullied in school, for example. Along his career, Jonathan tried out a lot of different things, always with the help of never feeling fear. How he did that? Stay tuned. We also talk about his thoughts on comparing himself to other people and that this is a dangerous concept. Jonathan shares that he only compares himself to whom he was the day before. And you'll hear his definition of success as well, which changed throughout the years, and right now rather is the ability to feel peaceful than status and wealth. He tells us how letting go defines the hardest decisions he made in his life, from leaving his marriage and deliberating about the consequences for his two children, to leaving his ex-business partner. In this interview, Jonathan also shares his thoughts on dealing with failure and seeing it as a learning process today. Get ready for his interesting perspectives on doubt and mental fitness and enjoy this talk. Jonathan, welcome and thank you so much for being here with me today in this podcast.
Hi there, it's an absolute honor to be here.
I would actually say that the honor is on my side, and I would like to thank René Bellac, who actually introduced me to you, and I am super excited having the chance speaking with you today. So let me start with one question that, you decide on how far you go, but who is Jonathan McDonald?
Oh, good question. My life is around enabling people to think in different ways. And I'm fascinated by our mindset and how our attitude to life can actually be adjusted by ourselves and actually kind of molded into achieving whatever we want to achieve. And so all of my life I've been in this kind of progressive realization of the power of the mind. And so as a child adopted at birth into a family who took me on after being fostered a few times, and then growing up in the south of England and really experiencing a lot of challenges through being bullied at school and then in society and so forth. So from a kind of a tough background, but we all have a tough past. We all have stories of challenges, and we're all fighting our own battles, right? And so, who I am now is a product of my past, and also, and more so, the gradual realization that the way that we think about what's happening is the determining factor of how happy we are, how sad we are, fearful and everything. It all starts with how we think, and that's who I am.
Thank you for this very open introduction into who you are and what made you who you are. And before we also go a bit deeper into your path and how you were actively shaping that, what was your thought when you heard the leading questions of this podcast, like what is my path, what do I really want? Was there anything that that was like any thought that popped up in your head, or maybe you have even asked one of these questions yourself one day?
Yeah, the thing that I enjoy about questions like this is that they are around things that really matter rather than things that, in my opinion, don't matter as much. So a lot of people, especially in business contexts, will speak about what is your job, what is your role, you know, or what have you achieved, or how many exits have you had, or how many shares do you own? And I don't see those questions as important as where do you feel humanity is going, or where are you on your journey, and or how fulfilled are you in your life? You know, these kind of questions and purposeful questions, I think, illuminate a much more fundamental part of human being. And rather than the other type of questions, more about human doing. And so, yeah, I enjoy your approach far more.
Yeah, thank you for your feedback and also for spending the time on a couple of other questions that I have in this regards. And you were just talking about the professional path. And I'm just wondering, looking at your path so far, it shows a very colorful and impressive picture. How did you find your profession, or vice versa? How did it happen? Did you have a plan? Did you follow a plan?
I have only ever done what feels right. I certainly had no career aspirations or objectives to start with. I didn't really enjoy school and college that much. I thought it was pretty pointless. I couldn't understand why we were learning things about the various different wives of Henry VIII or the design of Tudor houses. I appreciated the history, but it appeared to me that at least the British education system, can't speak for anywhere else because I only experienced this one, but it appeared to me that we were basically driving forward looking through the rearview mirror. And so I understood that, you know, we can learn from the past, but the majority of schooling seemed to be in topics and methods that were totally irrelevant to a world which was emerging into an internet era and then eventually into the World Wide Web. And we were learning how to use compasses and rulers and protractors, whereas it appeared to me that digital interactivity was a paradigm shift in terms of learning, and also we were prioritizing academic intelligence over emotional intelligence. And I figured that was kind of not really as relevant to me. And so I've always concentrated on what I feel good doing. And then if you look back over the 30 years career now, it seems like I've done lots of different things. And that's because what feels good at different times changes. And so that's why it looks like it's, I think the official wording is I've got a portfolio career. That sounds good.
I like that wording. I actually could use that for myself as well, looking in my rear mirror. But I was also just thinking, what would you say, what enabled you to so deeply trust your feeling and really doing what feels good and following that all the way through?
I haven't had very many fears. I've always seen fear to be a kind of an artificial concept. It's you learn very quickly when you're, let's say you're, as I was, I mean, from my background, from the age of 5 onwards, in predicaments that were really unfortunate at the time, and I think fear got almost literally bashed out of me. I think the concept of fear became arbitrary. So, in other words, I could or could not feel fearful. And my career, my life and career, I see them in the same context. I don't separate life and career at all. So my life has been relatively fearless, and I don't think, oh, this is a scary concept, I'm not sure it's going to work out. I don't think that. I tend to think, does this feel right? Could I feel peaceful or happy or fulfilled doing this? Is it with people who I can learn from, or is it an experience I can learn from and then evolve? And if all of those kind of factors are a tick in the box, then I tend to do it. And then, you know, 6 months later, someone goes, wow, that's so brave that you did that. And then I think, I guess it was. But I didn't think at the time, I'm being really brave. Does this feel right? And then I do it.
Yeah, lucky you. I'm just thinking about myself and how I had to learn, actually, that when I have these moments of, or when I actually have these thoughts in my head of like, okay, Gina, you're not good enough. You cannot do this. And what that did to me in the past. And I really had to actively learn that this is a process that I had to go through and understand that right now, I at least can say that those are the moments where I have to say, yes, I do it and I can. And this is where I always call it like dance at my, I'm actually dancing at the borders of my comfort zone or leaving that. And by that, of course, growing.
Yeah, that's where the magic happens.
Yeah, and that's actually, I mean, I also, you know, we jump a bit back and forth, but because you were just talking about that, the next book you're focusing on is going to be around mindset and strengthening your thought muscle. I love that. And I was just thinking about all these, yeah, let's say this inner carousel of thoughts or the way we communicate with ourselves sometimes, which is not really empowering all the time and not appreciative at all. What would you actually recommend to someone who realizes right now, listening to this interview, that this is something that he or she is facing regularly? Is there anything that you could share?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if we really look at the root cause of, let's take the imposter syndrome, because you referred to it, the feeling of not being enough, can I really do this? Surely other people are much better than me. If we look at the root cause of that, a lot of it is based on comparison. And I think one of the most worthy things for humans to give up would be comparison with others. And we tend to, as all humans do, we tend to feel, you know, do we have what it takes in comparison to the other people? Or could I get that job because there's going to be other people who are better at it? Or if I stood on stage and spoke about this topic, would other people think that I knew what I was talking about? Or should I do this podcast because maybe people will listen and think, oh, he's clueless or stupid? Or do I, you know, and we compare all the time. And I think that comparison is a very, very dangerous concept. And the reason I think it's dangerous is because we then deprioritize our own capability over the opinion of people that really, in the cold light of day, we don't care that much about. So it's bizarre that we tend to try and conform to a set of viewpoints that we've imagined of imaginary people who may or may not exist, who almost definitely don't care about us. But nonetheless, we feel as if that is the guiding force of how we should operate. By that, a wholesale. I think that I compare myself to one thing, and that is, have I evolved more or less than yesterday? And if I have evolved, and if I can evolve by doing something, then I'll do it. And I literally couldn't care less whether or not that is good enough in someone else's eyes or better than someone else's. You know, I don't need to be the richest, fastest, slimmest, biggest, whatever adjective you want to add to it, in someone else's eyes. If it works for me and it works for the people I'm around, then that's good. But it's understandable that we compare. It's just that my tip above all else would be, look at how much you're comparing yourself to anyone and what justification you have for that comparison. And would you prefer to do less, but at least not risk not being good enough in someone else's eyes? Or would you prefer to itemize exactly what fills you with peace and joy and fulfillment and contentment, and then execute that? And it's the cost needs to outweigh the benefit needs to outweigh the cost on that. You choose.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. In addition to what you've just said, because this is something I, of course, also see in my practice. I mean, I'm working as a career and life coach, supporting people also on during stages in their life where they're actively kind of dealing with these kinds of thoughts or internal blockages that are keeping them away from taking the next step. And the situation is that we only see from the outside what other people are doing, how they're doing it, and so on. So we only see, like, how do you say, the glance of it? Is that how you say that in English?
Yeah.
and the other thing is that there is not just one good way or the one way to get to wherever you want to go, right? So this is also something I really enjoy, looking at people very individual, like looking at the core strength or also the values each individual has, and really to understand that this is an individual path that you should, as you've just said, not compare to others, because the power actually lies in this individuality and being able to make it what you want to make it. And you were just talking also, you were mentioning the word success.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also something that I see in my work with my clients, that it's interesting how people sometimes don't even really think about what the word success means to them, right? So in the end, it's a word and we give it a meaning, and it's not necessarily created from the inside, but as you have already described, also from the outside, like external expectations or like what society thinks or does. And of course, this also might change throughout career and life. How do you define success today?
I see success as my ability to feel peaceful and in less conflict as possible. If I can feel at ease without feeling any anger or fear or concern or dis-ease, then that's success. I used to think success was status and wealth, and I now see success as peace and contentment. And so I don't know whether there were many, many events throughout my life that have taught me the lessons around what success really is. I mean, I've met some of the wealthiest people in the world who in general tend to be extraordinarily unhappy. I've met people with the best, quote unquote, best, fastest sports cars who have the worst possible marriages. I've met people who've created the fastest growing business at thousands of percent growth, who treat their staff like criminals. And so I don't buy into the general constructs of how success is theoretically measured. I buy a different version.
And did you ever have to choose between personal and professional success in the past?
Well, I have never separated personal and professional life. I actually still don't buy the difference in anything. You don't walk into your office and cease to be a human, then walk out and then start to be a human again. And a lot of people have professional ambitions that aren't personal, and that concerns me a bit. I think the alignment between our personal and professional life is a very important concept. So no, I think in the past my personal and professional version of success was based more on ego, status, and greed. I haven't actually deleted anything that I've really said or done. But when I look back at posts from as recently as a couple of years ago, I seem to be trying to show some kind of thought leadership position to the world, and I now look at that and think I see that as relatively arrogant, but at the time, I don't have any regrets. I don't live with regret. That's almost as useless as comparison. But I think at the time I was feeling, you know, this is the role I'm in. You know, I'm paid to be on stage as a thought leader and write books as a thought leader, and therefore I'm a thought leader. And here's a new thought for the day that it's, you know, could be useful. And I'm glad that it's added value to other people's lives. I've done, but I am now thinking more multi-generational and more legacy-based. I.e., what can I leave for next generations and the generations after that? You know, how can I impact learning systems and education formats, and how can I enable my children's children to understand the world in a more philosophical way? And that's more interesting to me than standing on stage telling businesses that they should get into digital marketing. I mean, I couldn't think of anything less interesting.
Yeah, wow. And I can only imagine that all this also from time to time requires decisions that you have to make. Could you share with us like one of the hardest decision you ever had to make?
Yeah, I think one of the hardest decisions is the same as any other hard decision. The root cause of any hard decisions I've had to make is letting go, always. Letting go of something tends to be what the hard decisions result in. and so letting go and leaving my marriage was extraordinarily difficult due to the fact there were two children involved who I love dearly still to this day. And I knew, I was pretty certain that by walking away from my marriage, I would be quite likely less able to see my children because of the restrictions that would be put on me. Mm. And that was devastating. But the alternative was raising my children, helping to raise my children in an environment that was not in any way loving. And I had to make the decision that the better outcome was for them to have two parents that they can be with in a loving environment versus one set of parents together in a counterproductive environment, essentially teaching the children that compromising happiness and love is okay. You don't need to be in a loving environment to still be together. And I don't want that lesson for them. I want the lesson for them to be, if you're in something that you've evolved out of or the other person's evolved away from, then there's no reason to compromise your happiness or anyone else's. So that's probably the hardest decision. And the next hardest is the same as that one. And it was in my business. I've had to let go something that I was, you know, my ex-business partner, you know, acted in a way that essentially I was left a choice as to whether to fight for something or to let something go. And I think letting go is actually a very important thing for us to do more of in life, and actually just surrender, and rather than always have to fight. And you know, there's things worth fighting for, but also there's a bigger picture here, and think, you know, what am I really trying to achieve? Am I trying to cause damage? If so, you know, revenge is a you have to dig two graves if you seek revenge. If you're trying to cause damage or cause hurt or cause harm or cause any of these things, what actually happens is you eat yourself up. To generate that negativity, it has to be generated from somewhere, and it generates from inside you. If you want to cause harm, you actually need to create harm yourself and then cause it. And I don't buy that. I think that shortens life. I think it makes you a negative person. And I think it'd be, for me anyway, I prefer to let that negativity live in someone else's mind and body. And it certainly isn't living in mine anymore. And so all the decisions I've had have been around letting go.
And yeah, so again, thank you very much for also sharing this very personal decision that you had to make. And you would just say, talking about this active process of letting go, which actually means that change is happening along the way. And this is also one of the topics that you're kind of an expert in. And I mean, sometimes change is driven by something internal. Sometimes it's external factors that are actually leading to change. But based on your experience and how change can be the power source for success, where would you see a valuable link between your work, also with companies on this topic, and an individual person successfully unfolding one's own potential?
Sure. Well, actually, this is an interesting point, and it's linked to my my comment around the fact that we aren't, there's no difference between us in life and us in business, and businesses aren't actually a construct. Businesses are actually made of people. So though businesses that are able to use change as a power, means that the people inside them have used change as a power, which means that people are using change as a power. So the personal context of power by change is the same as a professional context. So if you look at the concept of, you know, looking at a feeling that change is negative versus something that could be positive, that's a human decision that needs to be made. And so being powered by change is something that I am, and also we all have the ability to be. And so I don't see the any division between how businesses can be powered by change. Funnily enough, I, again, because I don't live with regret, it's something that I just have to, I accept as being what it is. But my first version of powered by change wasn't to do with businesses at all. I think powered by change isn't something that is specifically for only professional life or only business life. But I got signed by a business book publisher, and so the personal elements were kind of thrown into the first couple of chapters, and then the rest is in business. Whereas so interesting, my next book was going to be with a business publisher. Mm-hmm. And when I submitted my manuscript, they tore it apart and said, you know, this isn't businessy enough.
Oh,
and I said, but it's not about business. It's about mind. It's about how we think. And they said, yeah, but we need to make it all about business. And I said, but businesses are made of people, and people have thoughts. So we're talking about people. And they said, no, it needs to be about business. Anyway, so I'm not doing that book with that publisher anymore. And I'm uninterested in writing any business books because it's not real. It's like this separation that we have between, it's like, oh, no, that's a business concept. It's not a personal concept. It's like, but it's people. Why? So, yeah, I don't buy it. But I don't regret any of this. You know, I've had 5 books, and the 5th one was the most popular, Powered by Change. It's an extremely popular book and award-winning. And
congrats to that, by the way.
Thank you. And I really enjoy running the webinars that I do and the masterclasses I give and things are really – you know, really, really popular. And I love doing those things. But what I'm doing is helping people think differently. And we can call it, you can call it whatever you like. You can call it a business masterclass or strategic workshop. And I just nod and smile and go, yeah, absolutely. If that's the way you see, let's call this a business masterclass. And I will then spend 60 minutes talking about mindset. Oh, okay. Well, let's call it a strategic workshop. Fine. I'll spend 60 minutes talking about it. So it doesn't matter what people call it. It's actually about how we think. How we think actually determines everything, not least our behavior, but also our destiny.
Yeah. What is one key factor or one key approach that you could share that, yeah, people listening right now could maybe start looking at in a different way, or, yeah, that would actually maybe help them to accept and embrace change a bit more compared to how they might have done that in the past?
Sure. Here's the one takeaway on that point, and that is this this old proverb, and that is that when the winds of change are blowing, some build a wall, and others build a windmill. And what that means is that change is perpetual. It's accelerating, and it's the only thing that we know for sure exists, and we can predict. And so we know that change happens, right? That's just, we live and then we die. Things grow and then fall. Things start and then finish. Change happens. So bearing in mind that's the actual fact that change happens, it would seem to be a really suboptimal idea to try and resist it. However, that's what we tend to do in life. We tend to resist change like crazy. And so it's bizarre that we resist the thing that is the only thing that we can predict. Mm. And today's the slowest pace to change we'll ever experience. So the most sensible idea for a happy, fulfilled life is to think, okay, I can't change. So why don't I see if I can use change? And so rather than see things as, oh, I don't like this situation because things are changing, and oh, my workplace environment is changing, or there's this new person in my social group who's making the experience of hanging out with my friends has changed, and change happens. How can we use it? How can we think, you know what, I've decided that I'm going to use this change as a giant learning curve. And I'm going to extract every single centimeter of learning out of this change. And I'm going to use this change to become a me 2.0. I'm going to use this change to become an elevated, escalated, evolved version of me. And I know it feels uneasy and unusual because I've never experienced this type of change before, but I'm just going to park that feeling and go, yeah, that's what change feels like. The unknown is what change feels like. What am I going to learn from it? And that's my key piece of advice would be to be powered by change.
Thank you very much for sharing that. And I don't know if you would agree that in order to also, to be prepared and also have this inner security somehow, that it's also very important to be aware of this, I sometimes call it this inner compass, like being aware of what it really is that drives you, that is important to you, that makes you who you are in regards to your values and your strength and so on. So would you agree that this is also something that you could use as an anchor in these phases of change that are everywhere and happening, in order to really just trust yourself throughout the process?
Yes, exactly, and that's really well said. I think having an ability of knowing who you are, and knowing what you stand for, and knowing what matters, and knowing what you value, means that you are able to have an inner compass, as you say, and that's something that is. It would enable any business context to be more productive because you actually know who you are. The reason why Powered by Change starts with the first quarter of it, the first blade of the windmill, if you like, is around purpose. And that is actually to aligning the real purpose of being inside you, who it is that you really truly are. And once you actually can establish that and really properly look at yourself and allow yourself enough silencing to see the truth, rather than in comparison to kind of like think about things or compare yourself to others or work out whether you're enough for this life, and actually thinking, I'm going to pause that and sideline that, you know, what really drives me? And and then dealing with change is far more straightforward once you are aware that you are a windmill in the face of change. You are a structure that actually turns even more efficiently the more change happens. But you know who you are. You know the blades of your windmill. You know the structure of your windmill. You know how it can respond, because you can choose to respond whichever way you like, rather than just react, which is just a reenactment of last action you did. And we tend to react. We don't tend to respond with choice. We tend to just react. And that's not as productive.
Yeah, I really like that metaphor, to be honest, with a windmill. And of course, I will put all the valuable links from the books that we've just mentioned or the work you do into the show notes, just for everyone who's listening to be sure that they will get the resources to do deep dives on that as well.
Okay, cool.
And we were just talking about change and also decisions that sometimes are not so easy. And all this, of course, looking at your path again, you have founded quite a few startups, right? So I think it were 9 to date. At least that's what I got from my research.
Yeah.
That's correct. And I can only imagine that not all the time everything goes according to plan. Did you ever have to deal with failure?
Yeah, all the time. So the majority of things I've done haven't worked. And so, I mean, I don't know, you could call it failure. I call it learning. Failure is a comparative term, right? So it's like failure in comparison to who? Failure in comparison to someone else's success. Okay, fine. What is the success measured as for them? Is that what success is? Is failure because this didn't make X amount of money? Is failure because this thing didn't come to market? Is that what failure is? Because in my opinion, you can spend 6 months building something that doesn't go to market, but in that 6 months, you can learn 10 years worth of insight into a particular need in the marketplace. So yeah, I don't, most of the things in comparison to the way that humans tend to measure things, most of what I've done hasn't worked in their eyes, I'd imagine. In my eyes, all of the things I've done, I've learned a huge amount from. And even if you take my marriage, you know, I walked away from 2 decades of my life, and you know, was my marriage a failure? Well, if you think that staying married to someone that you're not actually in any way connected to anymore is success, then yeah, it's a failure. If you think that marriage that produces 2 children is a success, then my marriage was a success. If you think that, you know, it's all down to comparison. And I think that my marriage was an enormous success because it produced two humans in the world that I So I think that's a brilliant thing, and I'm tremendously appreciate and respect my ex-wife and their mother enormously for carrying the building the babies inside her, and giving birth successfully and being a brilliant mother to their throughout their childhood. So I have a giant amount of respect for her, and I think it's a huge success. And similar to business wise, I mean, I've been in very unfortunate business situations where I've been really properly screwed over, if you like. And I have learned so much from those experiences that I'm far more evolved, and it makes me more resilient to dealing with psychopaths, and it makes me more aware of what negativity looks like and how much I'm not identifying with that. And I just learn, and you know, that my consistent learning mechanism of being powered by change internally is my superpower, if you like, but it's accessible by every human being. It's down to whether we believe that we can. And I certainly do.
Yeah, amazing. And actually, the next question would have been one around what the key learning was that has had a huge impact on your life afterwards. So thank you for already answering that question. And I, of course, agree. So I think it's the learning that we should focus on. And there is always something that is a super resource for whatever comes next. But we have to look at it that way. And that again goes back to the mindset we talked about. So in all of these huge challenges that you accepted and all the different things you did, have you ever had something like inner doubt in regards to being on the right path?
I don't view doubt as something that I entertain too much. I feel that if I feel that my path is right, then it's the right path. Any doubt that I would normally be down to a comparison to what a better, quote unquote, better path would look like. The path that we're all on is our path, and if that path changes, it changes. And doubt is a relatively dangerous construct that, that sits alongside, you know, it's kind of a twin sister, if you like, or a non-identical twin sister of comparison, and which is a kind of a cousin or distant relative of fear. And this kind of stuff just doesn't really serve. It doesn't serve humans very well. I don't tend to doubt. I question things. I'm curious and think, oh, does this feel right? Does it feel right to commit to this type of relationship, or does it feel right to sign this lease on a flat, or does it feel right to get into business with this person, or does it feel right to launch this product in this marketplace? And I sit with it and think, does that feel right? But I don't tend to doubt choices, because if you look at it on a timeline, doubt tends to be tends to require a time machine. Doubt tends to require us to look backward and feel uneasy about a decision that's already been made. And now we don't have a time machine to do that. So doubt actually is, if it's a retrospective doubt, did I do this right or did I make this right decision? You're welcome to spend all of your day doubting. If that's going to help you build a time machine and undo something, then that's great. But I would place a large bet on the fact that it won't. What will actually happen is you end up around in a circle thinking and overthinking and overthinking and overthinking and not changing the past. It would be better to view a decision that you feel may have been wrong, let's say, and think, okay, well, what have I learned from that? And how can I make a better decision moving forward, rather than, oh, was that the right thing to do? And if it's a real-time doubt rather than a retrospective doubt, then it's less, I think, less to do with doubting what you're doing and more to do with questioning whether what you're doing feels right. And that would be my suggestion.
Yeah, amazing. I completely agree. And thanks a lot for sharing your thoughts around that. Jonathan, looking back at your life, maybe this is a nice last closing question of this great interview. Looking back at really like tons of experiences and amazing successes, as you define them, what surprised you the most?
I think what's surprised me is that we spend more time on our physical fitness than we do on our mental fitness. And so we will turn vegan. We will only juice cleanse, and we will join a gym, and we will do 10K walks and 20K hikes, and we will spend loads of money on skincare and loads of money on hair products, and buy the right clothes, and make sure we're the right weight, and worry about putting on a pound. And what we don't do is think, how am I thinking? What are my patterns, my biases? What am I really considering in my life? And out of the 70 to 80,000 thoughts a day that each human has, about 90% of them are the same as the day before. We don't look at that as much. We don't prioritize it. We prioritize whether or not we should have a 350 calorie or a 600 calorie lunch. And we don't look at how our thought patterns are actually limiting our progress. We buy into our imposter syndrome without question. We compare ourselves to others without question. We doubt our decisions without question. We think that we can't do something without question. And that is something that surprised me the most, is that of all of the things to prioritize, the thoughts that we have and the way we use our mind is consistently deprioritized. And I find that astonishing, absolutely astonishing, bearing in mind that how we think is how we experience reality. So it's like you would turn the entire thing upside down, surely. You would start with how you think and then worry about how much you weigh afterwards, because actually how you think about how you weigh or about what you weigh is more important than what you weigh. What you weigh is totally irrelevant. How you think about what you weigh is totally relevant. So yeah, that's surprising. I find it extremely surprising to this day.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing is, we have the choice, right? We have the choice of prioritizing in a different way, taking a closer look at these questions or these things that you've just mentioned. Wow, lots of food for thoughts, Jonathan. This was an amazing chat. Thank you very, very much. I enjoyed it a lot. And I am now super happy that I was able to share that with all the people listening. Thank you very, very much. I hope I will get the chance to speak to you again soon in the future, or maybe see you on stage somewhere one day when this is possible again. it was a pleasure. Thanks a lot. And I would say all the best for everything that you're taking on as the next big challenge, and with your book that is in production.
Yes, well, once I find a publisher that doesn't think that it has to be a business book, yeah.
Good luck with that. Jonathan, speak to you soon. And thanks. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Did you like this episode? Yay! Sign up for this podcast in your podcast player or on iTunes, Apple or Google Podcast, Spotify, Deezer or TuneIn. I hope to have you as my guest again soon. Ciao!